It's good to be here. My name is Melvin, and I'm an alcoholic. Sobriety date is February 8, 2002. I have 8 years in the program Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you. I want to thank Anna. I want to thank YPG for having me here. And this is probably the most exciting young people I ever seen. I know AA is in good hand with you people here. So when I'm dead and gone, it'll still be going on. You know what I mean? That's a good thing. And Dana, that was real good. And Lucius? Yeah, I met Lucius back. There he is, Lucius. How you doing there, buddy? It was good to talk to him, too. So it's very good to be here. And I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and a prosperous New Year, okay? All right, down to business here. All right, my name is Melvin Ford, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the After Work Bunch in beautiful Safety Harbor. If you're over in Safety Harbor, we meet Monday through Saturday from 5:30 to 6:30. On Sunday, 6:30 to 7:30, Step Tradition Closed Meeting for Alcoholics. You all are welcome. And if you're over there tomorrow, Sandy Beach is speaking at my home group tomorrow. So that's good. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go back in a little bit of my drunken log, but I'm not going to stay in that too long. I'm going to kind of move it up a little bit here. I come from a family of, my father was military. My mom was a registered nurse. She went to college and stuff. And I was raised strictly on principles and morals. You know, a little religion here. You never talk back to your parents, yes, sir, no, sir. You're disciplined. And not what I see from kids today when they talk back to their parents and stuff. You know, my kids don't talk to me that way because the Soul Train line stops right here. Ain't no break dancing here, boy. So, you know, as I was coming up in my childhood age, I started drinking when I was 8 years old. And my father had his own construction business and stuff like that. And for me, coming up, I felt like I was a child left out, you know. And I know I come from a middle-class family, hardworking family. My mom from Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia. She went to school with Martin Luther King, and she got a little history with that. My father's from Alabama, Tuskegee, Alabama, so they're both Southerners. And my father from the plantation and stuff right there, and where they, you know, pick cotton and all that stuff right there. And one of the things that I know when I was coming up that we didn't have a whole lot, but we worked hard, you know, very hard. We grew our own food, and that's basically what it is. We worked for what we had to get. But when I picked up that drink, my whole life started to turn around. My structure in life for its principles and morals and everything else started to evolve around alcoholism. I didn't know I had it at the time. And while I was in high school, I played sports. I was a three-letter. I was football, basketball, and baseball. I had over 200 scholarships in football, and I was just that good. If I would have stuck, if it wouldn't have been for drinking, I knew I would have been playing. I would have played professional football. I knew that today. My older brother played professional football for 14 years, and now he went crazy, and now he's in Alcoholics Anonymous. He has 14 years of being sober right now. That's amazing. And for me, it was one of the things that I went to sports for I can get away from drinking. And I knew I can hide behind that. But in my last senior year, all of a sudden I decided that it was time to celebrate. I'm graduating, you know what I'm saying? So we got together and got some wild Kentucky bourbon, big quart of that, a little bit of that wacky weed, a little bit of the blow, you know what I'm saying? All that stuff right there, side stuff there. But I'm not going to get it in. And I'm going to stick to the fifth tradition and as a respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. And came in for rehearsal. I passed out. And I ended up, the Dunedin police was politely enough to give me a ride home. And when I got out of his car, I puked in the back seat of his car. And I can hear my dad look at me and say, son, hard head makes a soft ass, whatever, you know. And here it go again. Here's my defiance. So when I was able to go to college here, I went to a small college to get my grades up. And the first thing my parents set me down was, you have to get your education. Everything else is secondary. Yes, sir. No, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Don't worry about it. I'm going to do what you tell me to do it. At the age of 18, you was legal to drink at that time, and you was legally grown. So already had a resentment in my mind. When I got to college, guess what I did? I partied and flunked out. You know what I'm saying? So, typical alcoholic here. And I remember when I call home, telling my parents them that, Mom, I got some bad news and some good news. She said, let's hear the bad news first. The bad news is, Mom, I flunked out, but I got this girl pregnant, and we're going to get married. And is Dad around so he can help pay for this wedding? And my mom said, I'm going to give him the phone right now. He just came in the house, and my dad came in the house. Hey, Dad, look here. I got some bad news and good news. And by the time I got to explaining the bad news, he hung up on me. And that's when I know I had burned those bridges with my mom, my parents, them. I defied their rules and their obedience that I was supposed to go to college and get my education. I was not supposed to go there and party and get some girl pregnant, and all of a sudden I'm going to get married. And I did get married to him, and we went to California. You know, and I stayed in that marriage for approximately 3 years. I had 3 kids. And all of a sudden, I walked away from the marriage. I wasn't man enough to, you know, to say, hey, it was over with. I left a letter to him, you know, like a coward, like a chicken, like I was, you know. Didn't have the guts enough to say, hey, it was over with. I didn't feel that we needed this. I had to write this letter and then sneak out and kiss my kids. And you know, I was gone. I caught the bus home. And that's where my alcoholism took me, you know. And that's when I found out that denial, and it talks about in the big book that men and women essentially drink for the effects of alcohol. I love alcohol, you know. I love the effects of it. I love the effects of it, and it helped me to leave my marriage here. It had me effects of it. I had left my kids behind, you know. And when I got back home to Florida, typical alcoholic, I already writing these things on the bus what I'm going to do. I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to get my wife back. I'm going to get my kids back. I'm going to be a father. And when I got home, my mom just, by then, my mother and father had separated. And my mom was looking at me, and she was saying, where is your wife? She's in California. Where are your kids? In California. Why are you not with them? I had no answer. She said, I don't know what you is, but you ain't my son. I never raised my son to run away from responsibility. You know, so she just said, well, I don't know what you're here for. Whatever you're looking for, there's the door. You're welcome to come back here, but don't bring your alcohol and booze around. So I hit the streets. That's what I did. And I ended up meeting up with some friends, and I turned that road the wrong way. And I got into gangs, selling drugs, bootlegging, all that stuff right there. And then, essentially, I went to prison. Not one time, but twice. And it took me the second time when I got out, during that time, my second time I got out, I got a job. And here it is, right when I was in prison, too, the second time, I had got behind in child support payments, like $18,000 behind in child support payment. I had 4 more other kids besides the other 3. You know, I was like really, you know, like Papa was a Rolling Stone. That was me, baby. Where my head lay, there was a kid. That's what it is. Simple as that, you know. So, hey, I love sex, and I go along with the booze now. That's it now. I ain't gonna lie to you now. Today I'm a single man. I'm okay. I'm all right with that today, so, you know. And what happened was on that journey right here, this time when I was working for Vienna Beef. I was a manager at Vienna Beef here, and I had various other jobs. I worked for Aerosonics, government job, building defense projects and stuff. I had various other jobs. We alcoholics are very smart people here. We're not dumb people here. I had so many good jobs, man. I screwed them up bad. I would get drunk or I would come in late and they would tell me something here, and then I got my own plan telling them what they want to do, and they say, well, there's the door, and then I'd show them my butt and then, you know, kiss my, you know what, you know, and you're fired, so, well, you know, kiss where the sun don't shine, just go find another job, you know, and that's how my life was, you know. I was just in a world of turmoil. I was pointing at you people, it was my fault. I never point the finger at myself. You people are the one causing me to lose my job, my relationship with my kids, you know, all the other things here, you know. And like we typical alcoholics is, we always blame everybody for our problem instead of looking at ourselves. And that's where my whole problem was. I was not looking at myself. I was a tornado roaring through people's lives here. And that's what it says in the big book about that. And as it goes on here, I end up going back to the streets again. And say, if you keep going to the barbershop, you keep getting the haircut, you know. And I kept going back to the same old thing, thinking I'm going to repeat the same things, the insanity. Well, the insanity got me back in trouble again. For you know, I had warrants for my arrest. And I'm finna really look at some time this time. And I tell you what, when I went back to my job, my whole plan was to, I know they were looking for me, and I ended up calling the detectives. I don't know what caused me to do that, but I think it was a power greater than myself. And I called the detective. My thing was to set up this diversion here. They're going to come to the job. I'm going to go out the back door. Of course, the bus stop is 5 miles away. I got my two luggage, and I'm going to run, catch the bus to Chicago. And they'll never find me in the Windy City here, you know. So that's my thinking here. So alcohol was a symptom of my problem. I got a thinking problem. That's why I'm here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because yeah. The disease rises in between my thinking here. My thinking was screwed up here. So eventually they came and picked me up, and they took me to jail. And I'll never forget this detective. He was a jerk, man. That's what a guy this guy was. Yeah, hot shot, pretty boy. We got you now. What you going to do about it now, huh? You're going to be doing some time here. You want to hear some music? Yeah, whatever. You want to? Yeah, I really, if I could have just got my handcuffs loose, I wasn't going to just drive my fist right through that steel cage right in his mouth, you know. And he turned on B.B. King. The thrill was gone. Boy, was I crying. Oh, Lord, my life is through. You know, boo-hoo and all that stuff right there. So, you know, I get down to 49th Street. Short story, though. They had to put me in a cell here because it was, you know, I was on suicide watch. They stripped me butt naked. I had to sit in a cell. And they had to come in the next day. The nurse, I had to cover myself up, and they had my blood pressure was up high. If I would have had any kind of belt or anything else, I probably would have killed myself right then and now. The guilt and the shame that I was going through, that I couldn't take it no more. And that's when I realized that my alcoholism has put me in the depths of a grift of the death that I couldn't get out. And that lonely despair, you know, that's where I was at. I was at a place where I couldn't, you know, here I was raised off of principles and more, and look at me now. What the heck is I'm doing here? So I sat in there for about 4 months. Thank God my lawyer came and talked to me. He said, look here, I got a deal for you, okay? If you don't want to take this 2-year drug deal, you can take the 35 years. And already three of my homeboys already got 3 life sentences, which they're writing me currently today. You know, they're doing that time, and the other 6 are dead. They got waxed. They got shot up. A couple of them got tried to rob and stuff like that, but that's a part of the thing that goes along when you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And by the grace of God, I got in there, and I say, I will go ahead and just go to drug court and get some help. And thank God I did get some help. I came to outpatient par, and 3 of my counselor had 17 years, my psychiatrist had 30 years, and psychologist had 31 years in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were ex-Hell Angels backers, so they didn't take no crap. Because they let me know right off the bat, if you ain't an alcoholic, they slant open that door, don't waste our time. So I had to make a decision what I wanted to do with myself. And I walked out of that, you know, to go home. And when I got home, you know, as you pass down the streets, you got to go through all the drugs, the, you know, people partying, drinking. And I just went home. I went home and white-knuckled it, you know, just that day. And the next day I got up, I went and joined my home group, which is the After Work Bunch. And when I went in there, I got a sponsor, I got a home group, and I got a service commitment. I had no teeth, no job. I was on probation. I was broke. $18,000 in child support payment, $50,000 divorce. Man, my stuff was looking real pitiful. I didn't wake up here and just say, oh, God, I think I better go to Alcoholics Anonymous and change my life. It didn't happen that way. This is my story here. I came from places that we all come from when we came in this room here. So if anybody new coming in, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a place where you can fulfill those broken dreams. You can be responsible, and you can be a mature man and a woman. And you can go back out there in the world and be a maximum service here. And one thing that when my sponsor did, we got through the got to step one, step two, and step three. I had to be honest, open-minded, and willingness to deal with whatever was going on in my life here. And step two was kind of hard for me because I had to use a group of drunks like you people here, and you people made me so sick to my stomach because you people were so happy. I was miserable. I had no teeth. I had no job. I was complaining about life suck, make a gratitude list. Gratitude my foot. I ain't got no job, I ain't got no teeth, I ain't got no woman. You want me to make a gratitude list? So I made a gratitude list, you know. I did what my sponsor tell me, you know. And look here, I was an alcoholic here. I had to see visual proof here. And that second step where I had to really get off the debating society. I had to find a power greater than myself, so I used your group of drunks. My sponsor said, I want you to watch them as they change their life. Watch their actions as they leave the room. Watch how they handle life out in society. Watch how they handle the job, the loss of job, the situation with the deaths, the kids, being a father, all those things there, being of service here. Watch them. And I watch you people. And you convinced me that I need to get off this debating society and move on. And so it was easy for me to get in step three, and then the pen and paper came out for step four because I was nothing but a liar, manipulator, cheater, and all those rotten things that I didn't want to see. But I looked on that paper there, and I really realized that, you know what? Ain't nobody put a gun in my head to make me drink and drug. I made a conscious decision here. That's when my sponsor said, well, let's make a conscious decision to put everything you got on that piece of paper. We're going to put it in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're going to work the 12 steps, and we're going to start changing your life and start changing that man that comes through that door. And that's where my whole life started to really evolve. And when I got through that step four and telling to my sponsor, I didn't feel no burning bush here, and I'm going to tell you that right now. But I felt a big relief that, you know what, telling another man how I feel about my shame and my guilt, what I had on that piece of paper, it took a chip off my shoulder. And it says in step five here, you know, it's a promise that I can look the world in the eye. I can finally look the world in the eye and admit that who I was, that I'm all right with who I am. That humility is starting to work with me. And so six and seven, I eventually got a job. I was working for Marriott. And I didn't think I had no character defects here. This is the funny thing about 6 and 7 here. It doesn't say too much in the big book, but in the 12 or 12, it says a lot more. And, you know, what happened to me was I was getting all these awards here for the Employee of the Month. I was really riding that pink cloud of those material things. It says in the 12 or 12, don't grab the cart before the horse. You'd be pulled back into delusionment. Okay, I was banking on all the material things, but I was not looking at my character defects as they were coming up. My arrogance had showed up. I stopped doing what they tell me to do. I would look at them and say, hey, look what I'm doing here. Then all of a sudden, fortunately, I got fired. And then my sponsor, my good sponsor, said, you're going to go back in there and find out why you're getting fired. I don't know about you people. I don't want nobody to tell me about myself here. I'm good for pointing your defects out, but don't tell me about you telling me about myself, why I got fired. I wasn't good with that. But I went in there and did what I had to do. And boy, when I came up out of there, I knew right then now, 6 or 7, I had better start getting to work here. If I'm going to change my attitude and go out there in society and be a maximum service and be a responsible worker, I better start changing my attitude here. In 6 and 7, I seen it took a lot of people out of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And today I still work with that, you know. And when I got to 8 and 9, I really, most of my list came from a 4-step, you know. And I had to really, but the most one I had to really work on was my, those amends to the IRS, to the state for my child support payment. And by the grace of God, I was able to pay my child support payments up. Now I'm 28 months ahead now, which is, well, yeah, 28 months ahead on my child support payments. I'm still in trouble with the IRS. I cut that $25,000 down to, I'm down to $10,000 now. But with the economy, that's okay. I'm dealing with that. And I was able to pay off my wife's credit, which I ran up to $50,000. And I paid that all off. Now she's married to another man, and I made amends to both of them, and we're friends today. That's the most powerful thing in the world. And my kids, today I'm a grandfather. I'm going to be a black Santa coming up Christmas. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I can't wait, man. I already got my Santa Claus suit. Now, I'm going to be the best grandfather Santa there is. You know, all I wanted was to get my kids back. And, you know, 10, 11, 12, I work on that every day in my life. And, you know, now I want to talk about how it is today. You know, today the economy is rough. I know y'all, everybody in here is experiencing the same thing, you know. And I have experienced some time when I was working with Able Body. I was making, you know, I got a job when I'm making 6 figures. Pretty good. And all of a sudden, boom, that went away from me. I got to lay it off. But the most important thing was Ralph said something very important there. He's saying that regardless of that, you must enlarge your spiritual progress with God. And I really relate to that. I have found myself now that even though things are hard and times are hard, I really work on my God of my understanding today. I'm involved in service work. I'm involved with my home group. I take a meeting up to the Salvation Army, 130th Avenue North, to detox. You know, I'm constantly working with my kids and stuff. And I don't want to live. I'll tell you what. When I was in prison there, and my kids was to write me those letters for Christmas, man, I used to cry. Dad, why you ain't here? Why can't you be here to be Santa Claus? Why are you here to take us places like to the parade and stuff like that? I don't know about you guys here, man. That really ate my lunch, man. That I actually, like, when I got sober and I made amends to my kids, I actually cried. And today, you know, who knows? When I play Santa Claus, I probably be crying then. They probably looking at me, what are you crying for? I'm just happy to be a Santa Claus, you know? You know, that's one of the things that this program has given me. And, you know, through the lives and times and changes that I go through, I'm telling you, it's difficult, man. And just this past Wednesday here, they had a sweep up of people who weren't paying child support payments. And I happened to got back from the detox center over here. I was taking a meeting over there, and I got back in. That was this past Wednesday here. I got in. I went down to the mailbox. I walked the dogs down there and went down to the mailbox. And all of a sudden, I just seen the SWAT car just all over the place. And the one officer got out the car. He looked at me. He said, you know what? You're a lucky man. I said, what you mean? He said, in other words, we're picking up people who have not been paying their child support payment. You has been paying your child support payment. They used to come to my house all the time, squad cars, pick me up all the time, because I was a deadbeat father. I would not even pay 1 cent, but today, Alcoholics Anonymous had changed that with a sponsor, and the principals of Alcoholics Anonymous had changed this man right here, that I got responsibility, and I better meet this obligation every day. And my obligation is to be a father, and to be the best father I can, and to be the best grandfather. And that was some of the things that I can put down on my gratitude list today. You know, when I went home, I just whipped out that gratitude list. Thank you for a new pair of teeth. Thank you for able to work on the beach. I'm working now as a property manager on the beach, Clearwater Beach here. I have keys to these people's condos. Mario Andretti's one of them. He's got like six of them. And these are million-dollar condos. I got keys to. I go in there to their condo and make sure I check on and keep everything up to date. Nobody never gave me no keys to come in there. I will come in there and steal everything I can get in there. I look at those statues and, hey, you got to go with me here, man. I got to go to the pawn shop here. You know what I'm saying? I got to get my groove on, baby. This is it. But, you know, and, you know, this has been a joy ride for me here. And through all the ups and downs I go through every day, you know, I was in a relationship with a young lady, and she wasn't in the program. And one day she came up to me, she said, I got a drinking problem. I kind of knew that from the jump street, from the kissing and oof. Sometimes I have to go gargle with Listerine and spit it out, you know. But I knew she had a problem. But what this program had told me, I could have very easily said, hey, screw it, you know. But you know what? I put my hand out to her, and I took her to the treatment center. I got it in there, and now she's getting help. And I know that relationship right now, I know it ain't going away. I had to be honest with myself here. But I had to help her because she asked me to help. And that's what we're supposed to do here. This is the message here. Wherever the hand of AA has been given out to, I got to respond to it. Even if I'm in a relationship or with a worker or with one of my siblings or whatever, I got to put away my self-centeredness and put that away. I have to help people. This is what she taught me here. You freely gave this message to me, this gift. I got to go back out there and give that gift back to them. And I got to be willing to go through any lengths to do it. You know, today I was sitting up here, I was over here today doing job interviews. I had to go to the federal building, had to take the polygraph check. This is my sixth time taking that polygraph test again. I passed it every time. The man said, God, man. I don't know how you do it. You just tell the truth. I say, hey, I'm honest today. I ain't got nothing to lie. What I got to lie about? The staff don't took me. I went to the staffs enough with a sponsor that I don't have to lie about who I am today. I am comfortable who I am today. My name is Melvin Ford. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member. I'm a proud member of this society today. You know, I'm not hiding and ducking no more of responsibility. I'm out here looking for work, and, you know, it was a good day today, you know. And I'm just glad to be sober here. And for anybody who's coming in, who's struggling, hey, don't leave till the miracle happen. Stick around, because this is a group here. It's just full of energy, enthusiasm, young, good-looking women, good-looking men. Yeah, I got kids, y'all, A's home. Don't worry about that. I'm an old man. But you know what? I'm a broke man, but I'm a happy man today. You know, I don't have to go through all that shame and guilt and say, hey, you know what? The economy is so what? I don't care. You know? Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life to walk through this stuff. You know, it's like if you're in the eye of a tornado and it's going like this and you're in the plane, you know what? Alcoholics Anonymous tell me to go right through that eye and come through the other end of that eye, the other end through the eye where I'm freely, joy, happy, and I'm able to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I sponsor five guys here, six guys. Five of the guys went out, and the one guy that is sober has AD. He's got a year. He has a mental, but he got a year. He didn't have no second plan. My plan is to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that, you know, that brings tears to my eyes, man. And the rest of them, yeah, they're getting ready to do some time, but, you know, I'll be here for them if they get out, you know. But this program always tell me, don't never put Alcoholics Anonymous in the back burner here. Please, don't do that. This program may give you what you is today. It can also take you out. And I always know, Alcoholics Anonymous come first. Without it, I won't be here. What you see right here is not a product of my own making here. It's a product through the 12 step and the 12 tradition and a God of my understanding. You know, and today I can walk through that door and know this man has really did some work to change. I still got a lot of work to do. I'm not a finished product here. I'm just another bozo on the bus, baby, and I just join this ride. Isn't it cool? You know what I'm saying? As we trudge that road to happy destiny. And the last thing I'm going to say here, right here, is that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share the experience, strength, and hope. My primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic achieve sobriety. My name is Melvin Ford. I am an alcoholic. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tiffany. I'm an alcoholic. This is Dr. Bob's last message delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with the feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is and we understand what service is, so let's bear those 2 things in mind. Excuse me. Let us also remember to guard that erring member of the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.